This is Jackie, Jackie Pretty, and you've graciously agreed to be interviewed today. And you're, do you want to tell our viewers where you are?
So, yes, I'm in Melbourne, Australia, where it is currently 6 a.m. So bright and early and doing the most important things at the beginning of the day, as you should.
Absolutely. So it would be great if you would give our viewers an insight into your day and getting up early, because you're a writer, but it looks like, you know, you have a very busy and successful business, coaching and editing and doing, you know, having great services for writers. So I'd love to hear more about that, but I'm sure our viewers will too.
Sure. So I'll give you a little bit of background about what I do, and then I might get into the morning routine because it'll make more sense that way. So I run a publishing company called Grammar Factory that turns entrepreneurs into authors, and we provide publishing services, so editing, cover design, printing, and so on. We also have a 30-week author incubator where someone might come to us with an idea, but they don't know what to do with it, so over a 30-week program, we coach them through developing the idea, writing it, and then take them through the publishing process, but they're in a group of people so they can all hold each other accountable. When it comes to my morning routine, I've always been a morning bird, so I naturally got up early. But I just found even if I was naturally waking up at, you know, 6 a.m., I wasn't getting much done. I would sort of roll out of bed and have my shower and hop onto email, and then suddenly it was 10 a.m. and I hadn't done anything productive for the day. So I consciously started setting my alarm at 5 a.m. because I felt like when I set my alarm and forced myself to wake up a bit earlier, it felt like I was taking more control of my day and starting my day from that position of empowerment, I suppose, just set the entire day on the right track. So it meant I got up and consciously decided what I was going to do, and then the rest of the day ran really smoothly. In fact, I'd done most of my must-dos by about midday. So I wake up at 5 and usually have a quick shower, then I'll meditate for 10 to 20 minutes, and then I'll write. And I've actually started writing fiction again, which is really exciting because it's been a few years since I wrote any fiction. And one of the reasons I struggled with that was because I was doing so much writing and editing as a part of my business that I would get to the end of the day and have nothing left. So now that's one of the first things I do, and I use 750words.com.
Okay.
Which gives you a green tick when you hit your 750 words, and you can have a multi-day streak and you get reports on what you're writing. So I find having that feedback, while it might seem a little bit childish, it really, you know, just a little bit of feedback really motivates you to keep going. So I do my 750 words, and it's only, or 1,000 or 2,000, depending on how the day's going, and it's only once that's done that I will then move on to the business stuff and check my email and get into all of my publishing responsibilities.
That's such a golden piece of information, especially for writers, because you probably hear this too, but I've heard it, and I know that I've said it myself, of, well, I just don't have enough time to write.
Yes. I mean, I've been there.
Exactly, and I've been there, and that's what I like about this book, The Perfect Day Formula, of he doesn't say you have to get up at 4 o'clock like I do, but just set your alarm 15 minutes earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm always amazed, and I think other people are amazed, of how much writing you can do in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
If you just sit down, have a prompt, and just write that stream of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that you mentioned that website, which I haven't heard of, 750 words, because you said, oh, it might seem childish, but I think it's great as writers. And even if we feel that we're successful writers in that sense, that it doesn't mean that, oh, we're successful because we're published, but we're successful, mm-hmm, because we're actually working and committed to our craft.
Yes.
that it's great for us to still have some accountability, whatever way that we find it, whether it's through the website that you mentioned or having a coach. And, you know, that's one thing that you do. So you're a writer and a coach. And it would be great to tell the viewers or, share your insight in why you believe it's important to have a coach. And I, for example, I was reading the feedback of some of your clients on your website, and it's really, you know, they, people were saying so many positive things of, you know, what you were able to offer them through, you know, through your company and sort of getting these writing projects done. And it's just very inspiring because I do think as writers, even if we consider ourselves professional and we've got nothing to publish or we've been published, that it's so great to have accountability and support. So I'd love to hear more about that. And I know our viewers will too.
That's a big question, actually. So there are just so many benefits of having a coach and having the right coach. One is obviously the accountability piece. You know, you have someone to keep you on track. There is, you know, rather than, you know, the alarm going off and going, oh, maybe I'll just sleep for my extra 15 minutes this morning rather than getting up and write, you know, okay, my coach is going to be checking in today to make sure I've done my words and I need to get them done. So that can help as a motivating force. I also think just you can get much better writing advice. So if you Google, you know, writing advice, one of the most common things that comes up is just write every day, or, well, that's probably the biggest one. And that can be good for getting you into the habit of writing, but I know especially for my clients who have small business owners, so they're very busy and their time is very, you know, very valuable. So if they're going to be taking time out of their business and away from generating a profit, they want to be using it efficiently, and just writing every day, it isn't efficient if they're writing the wrong things. When you're working with a coach, they can actually give you feedback on, okay, so you have this book idea. Here's how we might break it down into chapters. And then suddenly you have some structure for what you want to write. And it's not saying you need to start with the introduction and go all the way through to the conclusion, but you know that, well, these are, say, 8 of the topics I'm going to cover in my book. Which one do I feel like writing today? And you can then go where you're inspired, but know that it's going to contribute to this larger project that you're working on. And it's much harder to find those relevant topics when you're on your own. And one of the things that my editors and I see in the editing part of our process is that a lot of our clients set themselves a challenge to write every day for 30 days, and then we get their books and we end up cutting between a quarter and half of their content because it's either repetitive or it's irrelevant for their readers because they haven't done that thought process beforehand, or they haven't gotten that feedback from a one-on-one coach.
Exactly. That resonates with me as a writer and also as a coach. The other morning I was in a role, so I wrote 2,000 words. And I think went and made my second cup of tea and came back and thought, there's more to write today. So I wrote another 1,000 words. And so, you know, even to me, it's like, oh, that seems impressive, 3,000 words. But how much of those 3,000 words would I feel were actually publishable? And I might be able to take it down to 2 or 3 paragraphs. But I always feel as a writer and as a coach working with other people, you know, where I start with people on their projects is the first 2 or 3 months of just write.
Yeah.
Write and write and write and keep writing, and don't necessarily think about the format or the chapters or even where it's going, because you'll find where it's going in the writing. And you'll find, you know, we could work together with then looking at what you have and then making the formula of chapters, etc. So I think, you know, again, it's like, even if you just wake up those 15 minutes earlier and just write, and then if it's 30 minutes a day, I always think, how much, when people say, I don't have time to write, most of us can find those 15 or 30 minutes a day to write. And then, as you said, you know, how much a coach can help you. Because it can seem very daunting, especially if it's a first project of... So I'm really curious, and I'm sure the viewers will be too, sort of how... Because part of the series, I'd really like to offer people of how do you bring your dreams, but also, you know, what your passion is. So, you know, as a writer, how can you make that into your livelihood and write livelihood? Because, you know, as we know, there's very few people really that become like the big successful authors.
Yes.
However, there is still a way to make a living as a writer. You're not a New York Times bestseller. There's many ways. So I'm really interested in your journey to where you are today with coaching. And also that advice, that's probably a separate question, but, you know, leading on that advice to authors and writers who come to you with their projects and how you see, yes, there is a way to financially gain from this and also obviously creatively gain from this.
Okay, so... First, I think it's really important to cover a distinction between a couple of different types of authors, because there are, you know, the people I work with who, for them, the book is very much a means to an end. So they're not, they probably don't consider themselves to be writers. They're not planning to make writing a regular practice. It's, I want to get this book out to establish myself as an authority, and then I can start using it as a business tool. So that person is very different to the person who's probably a little bit more like you or me, who, you know, writing is a little bit of a higher calling, or it's a way of expressing ourselves. And even if a lot of what we write doesn't get published, we still want to write for the sake of writing because it's fulfilling in its own right. So those are two very different personalities. And if you're the means to an end writer and, you know, your book is a business tool, then it's actually easier to make money from the book, which almost seems a little bit unfair because, you know, the person who it's their passion and their purpose and it's what they want to be doing, it's like they should be rewarded for that. But the way the entrepreneurial author works is that their book is one piece of their business ecosystem. So, and this is the way my book works as well. So if you think of a business with a number of product tiers, you'll have some that are cheaper and some that are more expensive. And the way it usually works is you have a number of people come across your business. A large number of them might sign up for, say, the, you know, $25 book or the $99 online course. A smaller number will sign up for the, you know, $500 half-day coaching thing. A smaller number will sign up for the $5,000 coaching program. And that funnel is like your business ecosystem. Now, when you think of the role a book plays in that, one, it establishes you as an expert and an authority, so you can charge more for those higher-priced tiers and people are willing to pay more because, well, you're the published author. Two, it's also a low-risk way to get people into that funnel. So if someone meets me for the first time and they're like, oh, this, you know, one day workshop you offer sounds really great, but I just don't know whether it's the right thing, I can say, well, look, here's a copy of my book, which goes through a lot of what we cover. They're welcome to pay for it, but you can even have it for free. I'm happy to give it to you because it might help you. They'll read the book. And the reaction I want them to have is, oh, I got so much value from this $25 book. Imagine how much value I'd get if I spent the, you know, $500 or $1,000 or however much it is for the next level up. Mm-hmm. So it's almost a sales tool rather than a revenue stream. And that's where that business model is very different to the traditional writing model, mm-hmm. which is you want to try and sell lots of books and hopefully make a couple of dollars off each of them. And then that will add up to something substantial. Mm-hmm. Whereas this model, it's, rather than trying to make a couple of dollars a book, I'm happy to give that book away for free, knowing that giving one book to the right person could turn into $5,000 or $10,000. So when it comes to my own journey, my journey has really been around my business, and the book is a part of that. And now that I'm writing fiction again, I probably will be looking at more of the traditional publishing side, but my book, Book Blueprint, is really a part of the Grammar Factory ecosystem. So when we go over to the second type of author, the one who just wants to write, what can they learn from the entrepreneurial author? And I think the big thing is that a book is going to be most effective if it is a part of a larger ecosystem. So what else can they offer that their audience would find valuable? It is a lot easier for nonfiction authors because a lot of nonfiction is, you know, how to, and teaching your readers how to do something. So you can easily see how that might, you know, your book could be developed into an online course that, you know, is $100 or $300 or something. So suddenly the profit starts going up. It could become a one-day event. It could become a coaching program. If you're a fiction author, it's a little bit more difficult. What I think about is, what do you like to see from the authors you like to follow? So if whenever I'm writing or interested in something new, I tend to go through a bit of a binge and absorb everything I can from that author online. So I'll look at their blog, I'll see, you know, look at all of their advice. I'll look at the research they're doing. So what I find really interesting is either writing advice, which some authors do really well, mm-hmm. Or if you don't really feel like a writing mentor, like more information and education around the world in which you're writing. So let's say you do, you know, Victorian romance novels. You know, teach us about lingerie or something, you know, corsets and so on in the Victorian era, or the fashion or the social customs, and you know, people who are interested in that period, or people who potentially also want to write about that period, are going to be a really engaged audience and could potentially pay for really good education around that area. So does that help?
That helps a lot. It really does help a lot, because the previous interviews that I've done, I've asked a lot of questions on creativity. Mm. And I really haven't moved so much into how we can take it into the entrepreneurial spirit and the way, as I ask the questions, that we could actually, as writers and entrepreneurs, make a living out of the passion that we have. And so just giving people and viewers this idea that there is a way that we can be creative, whether it's in fiction or nonfiction, and have that as a product, you know, as you were saying, like a how-to book. Or, and it's interesting that you mentioned sort of, oh, if it's in the Victorian times, like, maybe we could, you know, describe this corsetry. And what's interesting for me, on a personal note, for some reason, the last few days, well, probably because I had read a recent interview with her, but Sarah Waters, you know, the British author, yes. And I was introduced to her books, you know, probably when she first started publishing, and I loved her books, you know, like Tipping the Velvet and Fingers. Mm. And I think partly what I loved about those books was that I was really dropped into the Victorian era, and it's like, mm-hmm. oh, I don't have to read Dickens to sort of like, and it's like,
yes.
it's great to read Dickens, but to have this, I want to say sort of like a contemporary mindset
mm-hmm.
dropped into the Victorian era. And so they were just page turners for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what, you know, what I feel that you really offered the viewers and offered writers was, you know, it really, you can write across genres and find where you're comfortable writing and also have something that you really could earn a living with,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it's right now or in the future, and that you can also move from genre to genre. So like,
absolutely.
Like you were saying that you're writing fiction again. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
I'd like to know, and if you're willing to share what you like to write, you know, as your
mm-hmm.
speciality. Your
So a couple of things. Fantasy has always been my big love. And I've been, I remember in high school when I first started writing, you know, these epic manuscript length Word documents, which I'm a bit scared to touch now because I'm sure my 13-year-old self couldn't write as well as I thought I could back then. But I remember back then I was really interested in medieval fantasy, whereas now, and this is where the Victorian reference came from, but I'm much more interested in the Victorian era and steampunk. So I've been playing around a lot with that. But for my 750 words, I've actually been looking at romance. And the reason for that is because for the type of fantasy I want to write, the plots are fairly complex. There are a number of major point of view characters who all have their own things going on. And So for me at least, that needs a bit of mapping out in order to do it well. And I've had a couple of key turning points, stumbling blocks, where some of the characters' storylines are perfectly clear and other ones are like, I don't actually know what you're doing right now. So for that, I have been more in the planning space. But for the 750 words and just to get back into the habit of writing again, I've been looking at romance because I quite enjoy reading romance as well. Because I don't want to devalue the genre, but it is a bit lighter and the plots do tend to be more straightforward. There's usually the heroine's story and the hero's story. And if you have a vague idea of where things are going, which I do, then you can sit down and go, okay, what scene do I want to write today? And I find that as long as I know the scene I want to start with, then that's enough for me to get through my 750 words or however many words I do that day.
And that's a great, you know, like insight too, of sort of like, oh, I know where the scene's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you keep it at 750 words,
mm-hmm.
that you don't have to be overwhelmed as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily need to go when, you know, in the scene, oh, the story's going to end here. I mean, it's great, of course, in a novel if you go, okay, this is my beginning, my middle, and the end. Just like, you know, rather than getting overwhelmed, I think if you keep it scene to scene,
yeah,
and you'll have a continuation. You'll find that there's a continuation in there.
Mm.
But
absolutely.
I
know the broad arc. Like I know how they meet and what the major complication is. And I thought I knew how it was going to end. The ending might change, though, as everything else develops, whether they end up together or not. But I do know the broad arc. So that just having a little bit of direction really helps. And that, I think if we go back to what I said earlier about sitting down to write every day and having just a little bit of direction really helps you write the right things. And even though I'm sure I won't use everything that I'm writing down, because it does have that overall direction, a lot of it will be usable.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't start writing fiction. I think, you know, there were like little stories from when I was, you know, sort of started writing when I was young. But I, for the longest time, especially when my children were growing, I didn't feel that I had, well, I didn't have a, well, going back to time, I didn't feel or think I had a lot of time to read. So I read mainly nonfiction, and then I started reading fiction again. And then it wasn't really until I was in a grad, in my grad program for creative writing, that I started to write fiction. And I personally love where fiction can take you. And it's like when you said you personally love fantasy, you know. You know, because we live in this world where, you know, we are dealing with the day to day. On the day to day. So it's like, you know, how do we get out of that? You know, and so partly for me as a reader, it really is, oh, I can just, you know, whether I consciously or consciously, unconsciously think it, it's like, I can get out of like this reality and into this other reality. And when you were saying sort of, you didn't use the word frivolous, but it was sort of like making this connotation of like romance. But, you know, it's really, I think when I talk to writers about when you're a writer, that it's also so important to be a reader.
Absolutely. Yeah, and when it comes to romance being frivolous or lighter, sometimes that's a good thing. Like one of my favorite fantasy books is Imogica by Clive Barker, but that's a really challenging read. Like it takes a good, I'm trying to remember the first time I read it. I think it took a good 50 or 60 pages before I was really into it. And until that point, it was a real struggle to get through it. And even, I remember reading it, and it wasn't one of those books that just swept me up and took me away, but I was reading it going, this is really interesting and fascinating, this world he's created. But it was a commitment to read that book, whereas sometimes at the end of the week I don't have the energy to work on reading a fiction book. It's like I want to read something that's going to suck me right in and have me on the edge of my seat, and romance does that. And young adult fiction does it as well. I quite like young adult fiction too for that.
That's, it's interesting you say that because, well, I think, you know, probably the most famous, book that's gone in cross genres, I should say sort of age genres is, you know, Harry Potter.
Yes.
And I resisted and resisted and resisted reading.
So did I actually.
I just want to say, when people say, oh, you have to watch this TV show, or you have to read this book, I'm always a bit kind of leery and just like, oh, is this sort of popular mainstream or whatever? And then finally, I read Harry Potter. And, you know, it was just so great to just drop into this world. And I think it was the first time that I'd read anything like that. Because I didn't necessarily, I don't know, I mean, it feels like there's, I mean, it's fantasy on that level, but it's like I didn't, again, I didn't read fantasy so much because I was like, oh, I have limited time, I should read this nonfiction book, blah, blah, blah. So, and I think, and you might be able to address this better than me, but I think, young adult fiction is might be one of the fastest growing sort of subcategories of writing and books right now.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big selling points of young adult is that it's on that threshold between, you know, teenagers and adults. And I mean, one of those sayings is that a good children's book is something that adults should be able to enjoy as well, and young adults sit in that threshold. So there's a much, even though they're targeted at the, know, older teens, they actually have a really broad reach. And I think that, I mean, our society and culture is so addicted to productivity and making every moment really matter that, you know, it's nice to have that as an escape, rather than forcing yourself to read nonfiction all the time. And I read a lot of nonfiction, especially because of my business. But, you know, life's about enjoyment as well. It can't all be productive all the time.
Absolutely. And I really do feel that that's what a great book does. You know, it for me, I can only speak for myself as a reader, but it's sort of a great book for me is like, I love like historical fiction. Like, you know, it's one reason why I enjoyed Sarah Waters, but that I'm going to learn something. I switched onto this other part of my brain. And it's like that pure enjoyment. Like, how many people have you heard, like people that you know, and I'm sure you said this yourself, like, oh, I can't wait to go on holiday. Like, you just like sit down and read these books.
Yes.
I know. I'm actually on that note, I'm also really interested in some other authors that you enjoy. Because I always think it's great to have good references for authors and great books.
Well, my favorite author at the moment is V.E. Schwab or Victoria Schwab. She does fantasy for young adults and adults as well. I came across a book of hers called A Darker Shade of Magic. Probably, what is it? It's April, so a year ago now. Because it was on my honeymoon, actually, when I came across this book. And fell in love with it. It was one of those, it's interesting. I find, I read some books and they just make me want to read more, and they have that really, they're very good escapes. And then I read other books and yes, I love them and want to keep reading them, but they inspire me to write. And this was one of those books. I read it and went, oh, I want to write like this. And this is exactly what I want to create in the fantasy space. So of course I went home and ordered everything she'd ever written before that. and she, yeah, I'm not sure how to describe it. They, maybe because she's a young adult author as well, but they're these books that just draw you right in. Her worlds are very interesting. I haven't come across anything like them before. The characters are very believable, and yeah, I just couldn't put these books down. So she's my big favorite at the moment. Who else? I should have prepared for this.
Oh, well, I
should have come with a list of authors.
Stupid. I think that's, for me, one thing that you said about sort of an author that draws you in, it's like, you can't put it down. You know, it's just like, I have to keep reading it. It's like that page turner, and I'm, you know, I'm reading a book and I'm looking at the clock going, I have to leave for yoga, and I have to leave. And, oh, it's okay if I'm just going to be 5 minutes, but I have to read a few more pages. And I'm guessing that is also what you do as a coach, whether you're coaching people, you know, with their nonfiction writing, but also guiding them with, you know, like, this is, you know, like, this, what you've written here is very informative. It's great. Mm. And as a reader, you know, I'd like to know more.
Mm.
And I was wondering if you could speak to that when you have specific clients with their writing, you know, how you sort of draw that information and that writing out for your individual clients.
One of the good things about nonfiction, especially how-to books, is that they are a bit formulaic. So there's some advice that applies to every book. And one of the things I've written about on my blog and that I cover in my book is the idea of what, why, how, which are, you know, the 3 points you need to cover for every topic you discuss. So what are you talking about? You know, will your reader understand this, or do you need to give them some background or explanation because it's a foreign concept or foreign language? Why is it important? So, you know, what are the benefits if they follow your advice in this area, or if they understand this concept? What are the risks if they don't? And how do you demonstrate those benefits and risks? Do you have a personal example or a client case study or some statistics to back that up? And then how? So how can they actually take this information and implement it in their business or their life or their health or whichever area is relevant to your book? And what I find is that if an author is weak in one area, they tend to be weak in that area throughout the entire book. So my editors and I will find ourselves editing and we'll go, okay, you need to explain why, like throughout the book. Or, okay, this is great, you've told us why this is important, but is there a practical exercise or list of questions or, you know, something they can actually do with this information? So when you know the broad concepts that they need to cover, it becomes quite easy to ask the questions that they need to answer to get that information out.
I really, you know, that point of, is there an exercise?
Mm.
And that's so great because, you know, it's, you know, having an exercise that we could be reading, and then we're sort of in that mind, you know, we drop into the consciousness, and then it's like, okay, there's an exercise, so what is the takeaway from that? And then it engages this other part of your brain to actually engage. So you're
absolutely
sort of, yeah, and that, so I love that you offer that piece of like, okay, and that you're saying that you'll see, oh, if this is done here, that it's tended to, you know, to be repeated. Mm. So again, it's sort of coming back to how helpful a coach can be. And as you said earlier, it's the right coach because,
yes,
you know, I didn't realize until I started this interview series of, you know, looking out there and seeing how many people there are coaches, you know, how many coaches there are. It's like, that can be overwhelming, but it's finding the right coach, as you said. And I was wondering, do you ever, if someone, you know, comes to you and they want to be coached, are there people that you just say outright and up like, I don't think I'm not the right coach for you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the biggest, you know, red flag is, are they our typical client? Are they an entrepreneur who's writing a nonfiction book? If they're not, so if they're writing fiction, then it's like, well, no, this isn't what we specialize in. And in fact, I remember when I first got started, and back then my website wasn't, so if you go to grammarfactory.com now, it's very clear that it's designed for entrepreneurs and business type books or personal development type books. Whereas when I first started, it wasn't as clear because I was in that space where I was worried about turning people off. So I would get people inquiring about my editing services, and they would submit a couple of chapters and they would be fiction. And I'd look at them and go, well, I can see that this, you know, needs a lot of work and it isn't where it should be, but I don't actually know how to improve it. Whereas pretty much any nonfiction book that comes to us, I can go, okay, yep, here, this is what we need to change. So one, they need to be an entrepreneur writing a nonfiction book. After that, the next piece is, are they coachable? So there are a lot of, and this is one of the downsides of the entrepreneurial market and the book being a means to an end, is that there are a lot of coaches in my space who are saying, you know, 90% of people aren't going to read your book anyway, so it doesn't matter if it's good or not. It just needs to look good. It needs to be a book, and that'll establish you as the authority, and then you can charge more and experience all of the benefits. And that means they don't see the value in structural editing, which is what we do. So we will pull a book apart and put it back together if we have to. We might even rewrite it or come close to it to make it as good as it can be. And if a client is just attached to getting a book out there and doesn't care if it's good or not, then they're probably not going to pay for these editing or these coaching services. They're very happy to work with someone who'll just do a proofread, and, you know, the book being subpar. So those are the two biggest things. Are they in our target market, and are they open to being coached? Are they willing to, you know, are they comfortable with us sending their book back to them and potentially having cut 10 or 15,000 words and then they need to write more? We do a lot of education at the beginning of the sales process to make sure they know what they're getting into. They know that we're going to do everything we can to help them publish a great book, but they also need to do their part.
And again, you have just addressed something really important, I believe, is someone coachable? Is this person willing to be coached? And it's definitely, I mean, if you're not willing, then someone's might, you know, your coach is going to give you this advice and you're going to say, or you might think, an individual, okay, but I'm going to do it this way. And then I'm going to do it this way. And then I'm going to do it then I would be thinking, so I'm not sure why you hired me as a coach. And of course, it's not that you're not going to listen to your client when they say, but I have this idea to do this. And especially as you're saying that, you know, you have, it's very specific what you do, and there is a formula. And really, it's like you've had years of experience and you have many hours and your time put in that you have seen and you know how this works. And for someone who's going to come to you and say, I want to hire you as a coach, and hopefully they've done their homework and they've seen all these, you know, like I was saying, how you have these great reviews on your website, then there wouldn't be any reason not to be coachable. And overall, I've really in the belief that someone who comes to you, you will attract the people who are meant to work with you.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. As you know, we don't have to sort of be in the scarcity of, oh, well, I have to chase people, or, you know, for example, I'm a coach and you're a coach, but there's no competition. It's like, yeah, you and I will find, you know, we'll, the people, I don't want to say even right, but the people that will gravitate to work with us will be the people that we are, this is what I have to offer you. And then if I was working with someone in fiction, for example, and then they said, you know, I have this great idea for my entrepreneurial book, and it's more of a how-to book. And I can quite honestly say, that's not my expertise, but you should contact Jackie.
You know? Yeah, and that's what we and that's what we do as well. If someone comes to us with fiction or poetry or a screenplay, I'll say, look, this is not our area of strength. It's not what we do, but here are some other people who might be able to help. And I mean, the thing is, there are hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of people who want to write books every year. There's plenty of business to go around. And, you know, if someone's not right for you, then that's fine, because someone else will be. And getting hung up on the person who isn't a match is just going to take your time and energy away from, you know, the other person who is.
Absolutely. I do agree with that 100%. And, you know, I'm working with one client right now, and I'm sure you feel the same way with this particular client in particular, but with everyone I work with, I feel really honored that they've chosen to work with me. And also, when I'm working with them, I'll even say to them, well, when this project is done and when we do this and when, and I said, I know I'm saying we, it's because I'm really committed to this project as much as you're. Like, I feel that it's this joint project, because I'm going to hold your feet to the fire.
No, it's funny. One of the ways I talk about it is like, yes, your book's your baby, but It's our surrogate child. Like, we really care about it as well. We want it to grow up to be a responsible adult, and we're going to do everything we can to help make that happen. And I think that helps as well when you give feedback that maybe isn't what the author wants to hear, because I think it helps to know that we also have an emotional investment in the book, and we do become attached to the books we work on. And I think one of the, especially at the editing stage of the process, because that's where the biggest changes take place. Like, because there's already something to work with, as opposed to, you know, cover design where you're creating something from nothing. But the editing is really an evolution. And one of the things my editors need to be able to do is to see everything a book can become and help work with the client to make that happen. And one of the reasons we get so involved is because we can see all of this potential, and it's, and when the client recognizes that, it makes it so much easier for them, you know, to see us as a part of their team rather than, I can't even think of a word, rather than someone who's, you know, just trying to destroy their work.
Absolutely. It's good that you say that, because I think that with most people, you know, whether it's a writing project or a business project or something, there's usually some point in the journey where you just either have writer's block.
Yes.
or you just lose motivation. Mm-hmm. You come across, you know, it's like the obstacle. Like, what is the obstacle? And again, you know, it's like, for me, a great reason, like, I have a coach. I was interviewing an author and a coach the other day, and she said, I have a coach for everything. I think it's like a coach at the gym, you know, a coach for her writing, and a business coach. But especially when you get to that obstacle, whatever that obstacle is, and often when you're on your own, and I often mention this, as being a writer, it can be quite an isolating career or, mm-hmm. you know, hobby, whatever we want to, you know, call it, whatever we believe where we are, what stages we're in, but very isolating in mm-hmm. some ways for some writers. And so when we hit that obstacle, who do we reach out to?
Yeah. And,
you know, it's obviously we could call up a friend, but your coach is mm-hmm. the person that you really should be reaching out to. And your coach has the experience, and even the personal experience of saying, I've had writer's block, and someone might mm-hmm. say, you know, I had writer's block for 6 months once, and this is what got me out mm-hmm. of it. So again, it's like, and what I'm curious, you know, if you do have a writer that's, mm-hmm. you know, in this incredible flow, and they've gone like, they've got half of their book written, then they've got, you know, like three quarters, or then they're really like, mm-hmm. I'm nearly at the finishing line. I've got this 95%. It's 95% done. Mm. And so, you know, how you guide them through just, you know, holding their feet to the fire.
So there are a couple of things. One is, you know, depending on what stage the manuscript is in, we might just start the editing process early, because sometimes what someone, like, I remember when we had this one client who's like, I know it's not there yet. I know I've got, you know, at least another 5 or 10,000 words to go, but I'm banging my head against a wall. I'm not getting anything done. I just need some feedback to take that next step. And so for her, just starting the editing process a bit early, even knowing that that would mean there would be more work for her to do after the initial round of edits, that got her unstuck, because rather than looking at it going, I know there's more to do, but I don't know what that is, you know, we pulled her book apart, put it back together, and she just, there was a lot to do, but it was a very specific list of things to do, and she knew exactly where she needed another example or another exercise. And I think the break also helped, having a few weeks off the book before we sent it back. And what ended up happening was she was very, very good at following directions. So when it came back for the next round of edits, there really wasn't anything left to do. We were able to get straight into looking at the line edits. So, you know, spelling, grammar, sentence structure, and so on. Mm. If the book's at that stage, there's enough there, sort of 80% plus, then we might just go straight to the editing and go, okay, let's see how you do with some feedback. The other thing is having a break. So I know we've extolled the virtues of writing something every day, but sometimes you do need a break. And I think this takes a little bit of self-awareness, knowing whether do you genuinely need a break or are you just being lazy? But if you genuinely need a break and it's been, you know, days or weeks when you're even still writing every day, but you know it's nothing of substance and you're just rambling to get your words up, then maybe just taking a week or two off and not thinking about it at all and coming back with fresh eyes can really help kickstart things.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I really like to do is other creative activities that have nothing to do with writing. So I recently started trying to teach myself how to play guitar, which is good because it's creative, but it's also intellectual, and it uses all of these different mental and even physical muscles because you're using your hands differently. And I think it also has the same benefits of taking a break because you're simply not writing, but I think there are mental benefits because whenever you're doing something new or using your mind or body in a new way, you're creating these new neural pathways which then help you think differently. So then when you go back to your book, go, oh, this answer was sitting right in front of me the entire time and I didn't realize. And I think Einstein did this. I think he played violin maybe when he was having trouble with an equation or whatever he was working on. He'd go play violin and then come back to it.
That's, I was thinking that because, you know, when my writers group that I facilitate, I keep colored pens, blank paper around, and people, it's really interesting. People will often start doodling and then draw. Mm. And I'm very much too of the belief of like having something else creative to do.
Mm.
So that, as you say, it's like, it's valid. It's absolutely valid and valuable to take a break from your mind. And like you said, it's like, oh, you know, you can reassess. Am I being lazy?
Yeah.
I definitely know when I'm being lazy. And I know, oh, but I want to take a break, but I want to still be creative. So I just did a painting workshop. It was Paint Your Muse.
And I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah. But I enjoyed it so much, and I really saw how I dropped into that very meditative space.
Mm.
And they have, she has another workshop coming up. Actually, I interviewed her because she's so inspiring. I've known her for almost 20 years, Shiloh McLeod, and she's just incredible, the work she does. And also I pinned a note, you know, magnet up on my fridge. For many years I've wanted to learn Celtic harp.
Okay, wow.
And I've always had those excuses of, yeah, but I'm running a business and I'm raising my kids and I'm writing, etc., etc. And I almost feel at this point that it's almost where you can't afford not to.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know what that other creative thing will inspire in your life and how it will inspire
Absolutely.
You. So,
and so you just made me think of something. Last year I turned 30. So I've got a good decade of adulthood behind me now, and it threw me into a bit of an existential crisis, not because I'm getting older, but because this decade has passed and there are all of these things I've been wanting to do for a long time. And I thought, imagine if I had actually started when I graduated from uni and I had 10 years of, you know, dedicated practice behind me, imagine where I'd be now. Like, you know, guitar was one of them, singing is another one, and various skills, getting into better physical shape. And I was like, you know, it didn't need, and no, I don't need to train for the Olympics or anything if we're talking about the getting in shape one, but if I started 10 years ago, I would be in a much better position now. And I think it's a Chinese proverb that says, you know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, the second best time is today. And when you say it's almost too late not to, I think was the phrase you said. It's like, if I'm thinking about the last 10 years like this, and yes, I've done a lot and a lot of productive stuff in that time, but if I'm thinking, oh, look at what else I could have done and the opportunities I missed and the development I missed, how am I going to feel in another 10 years if I don't start now?
Exactly. And just framing it that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I have been thinking about playing the Celtic harp for at least 20 years, maybe 30. And so I'm just like, no, I want to do this now. And I don't want to look back and go, oh, it's not because I haven't been doing anything. And I have been doing lots of other things. But it really is, I love what you just said about the Chinese, you know, proverb of, you know, the best time to start plant a tree was 20 years ago. It's true, you know, it's like, okay, so if we want to write a book or we have something that we feel would be great to write about, we don't even know if it's going to develop into a book, but I'm sure you mentioned earlier, like, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people is saying, I want to write a book. And it's like, how many people do you meet who, especially I'm sure when they're someone you've struck up a conversation with, you don't know, first time you've met them, and they'll ask you what you do, and you tell them, and they'll say, I have this idea for a book.
Yes.
And it's amazing how many people have this idea. And often, because I'm very much about, you know, write your story. Partly as the chair of my program in my MFA program, she really guided me towards doing my memoir writing over the novel that I was finishing just to complete my thesis. And she said, you know, when you write your memoir, it's the story that you know.
That's true.
It's your story. So I'm very much about whatever the writing is, whether it's, you know, the authors that come to you of this is entrepreneurial writing, you know, how to guide books, you know, for whatever, you know, sort of educational. I mean, really educational. And then there's memoir writing. There's so many genres. But it's like, write your story with whatever way that is. Whether your story is, I'm an entrepreneur, I started my business from scratch, and I only had $10 in the bank, but I it's still writing your story.
Absolutely. And what you raised there is quite an interesting point, because a lot of people think, one of the things I've written about and spoken about is the idea that there are different types of books, and you need to know which type of book you're writing, because each one has a different structure and you would cover different things. And when I put it like that, people often get a bit scared, because they go, oh, it's either or, and I either need to do a how-to book or I need to write my story. I can't do both. And it's like, well, actually, let's say you're writing a how-to book. There's no reason why your story isn't a part of that. And people will often share their journey in the introduction, because that's the best way to demonstrate that they've tested what they're writing about and that it works. And then throughout the steps, they'll return to that story to say, you know, this is when I faced this problem and this is how I implemented this step or learned this step and how it solved the problem. And then that links back to the why content I was talking about earlier, because that demonstrates that it works, and it's why the reader should continue reading and should follow this advice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad we're on the same page with that, because it really is like you just demonstrated. It doesn't have to be that you're writing your memoir, but usually the author will say, you know, in the introduction, this is how I got to this place of writing my story. And it's, for me, it's sort of a little bit like the lottery ticket. I remember, you know, my dad would buy these lottery tickets, and he had this theory that you have your numbers and you stick to your same numbers. And I'd be, oh, I'm not into buying lottery tickets. It's the poor. And he had this, you know, he quit back and said, you know, if the person who bought the lottery ticket didn't think who was the winner, if they didn't think when they bought that ticket that they had a chance of winning, they would never have bought that ticket. So how I see that is writing a book, that if people thought, oh, if I don't believe that I have something that anyone else wants to read about, which means they would have never written that book. For the people who did, there are people, always people out there who want to know what's in the book. And it's a gift to them. It's a gift to the author. It's the author gave a gift of writing that book.
And now I remember there's a life coach who I've known and followed for a number of years. And one of the things she says is, and it's around having a higher calling and feeling like you're meant to do more and have a bigger impact on the world. And one of the things she says is, if you weren't meant to have this impact, you wouldn't feel that call. You wouldn't want to, because not everyone does. And it's the same thing with a book. If you weren't meant to write a book and you didn't have the ability to write a book, then you wouldn't want to.
Absolutely.
You know, you'd be one of those people who is interested in something else.
Right. Or who's saying, I'm going to write a book, and you don't do it. So, and that's, again, coming back to why it's great to have a coach. And that note, you know, it's, we've been talking for an hour, and it's gone like this. It's so great. So I wanted to say a couple of things and ask a couple of things, but just that ending part reminded me of a book that I just finished. A friend gifted me a book called Change Me Prayers. And the author is Tosha Silva. And I, you know, people can give you books and you're like, oh, this looks interesting, but you know you've got five books already. And you're like, that's going to have to wait. But I just started reading it immediately, and it was just so wonderful to read, because, you know, I definitely have a, you know, my spiritual life. And it was very much about, you know, you can have your prayers of, you know, of course there's manifestation prayers, but it was really sort of like the divine is providing for me what is most needed right now. But so when she was writing this book, she signed up for this convention in San Francisco where you go meet publishers and you'll get connected and they'll, you know, they'll publish your book. So she went up, and the man in front of her, an author, he hadn't been published, was telling an agent, I've got this great idea for a book, and it's this dinosaur family where they're humans, but they become dinosaurs, then they become human, and then they go and eat everybody on the planet. And this guy's going, the agent's going, this is a brilliant idea. Like, give me your contact and we'll get you published and blah, 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 blah. And then Tosha Silva went up and said, this is the idea. This is my book. And the agent just went, oh God, not one of those books. You know, I don't want to hear, don't even, you know, like, please just go away. And he was quite rude. And, you know, her book was published and it's been very successful. So just for people and viewers to know that really just to go with your heart and to know that what you're writing is what you're called to. And that's basically, Jackie, what you had said, sort of, you know, calling.
Absolutely.
Doing that. So I really appreciate that, you know, you got up early. That I know you get up early anyway, but I know at 6 a.m. you could be doing other things. So I really appreciate your time. And I know that you have a gift that you'd like to offer the viewers. So I'd love it if you would share what that is.
Absolutely. So it's my ultimate guide to writing an awesome book, which is a resource portal I've put together that includes, well, the first two chapters of my book, interviews with a number of the authors I'm connected with about their publishing and book marketing experience, some webinars on writing and self-publishing. So basically everything you need to write an awesome book. And you can get that for free at grammarfactory.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And what we will also do is make sure we'll have all those links and connections for all mm-hmm. the viewers so that they can hop over to you and get that very easily. And I just really do appreciate your time, and I appreciate the resources that you offer. And just so thanks so much for doing what you do, because you're helping, you know, I don't want to say helping, but you're guiding authors, and you have had a number of people published, and it's just so fantastic that you're offering that work. And I'm really grateful again that you took the time to talk to me today. And I would love to, because we've had a great conversation, that I'm going to put more of these interviews and summits together in the future. And I'd love it if I can reach out to you again for another one, because I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Absolutely. I'd love to be a part of it. And thank you for having me this time. I've had a wonderful time this morning.